I just want to take two mitzvahs in this week's parsha. He saves there.
Well, I'm already making sure.
We've got two today, so I'm doing the first.
That's incredible.
I'm the first guest speaker.
The third one will be Mashiach.
Okay, so at the beginning of the parsha, it says in Perek Chaf Beis, V'chein ta'aseh l'chol avedas ahicha asher tovad lo tuchal l'hisalem. So you shall do for any lost article of your brother that may become lost, you shall not hide yourself. So this is referring to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, returning lost objects. So the basic obligation is that one who finds an object that has been lost by a Jew is obligated to return it to its owner. If the finder picks up the item and then decides to keep it for himself, he transgresses two negative mitzvahs and one positive one. And you can't ignore your obligation and simply walk away from the lost item, because that would be transgressing a negative mitzvah. And men and women are equally obligated in this mitzvah. The lost object must be worth more than a pruta in order for the mitzvah to apply. If an odd glove, shoe or rubber is found, one is still obligated to return it, even though it's worthless by itself, because it does have value to the owner who's got the other part of it, the other pair. There is no obligation to return an item, even if it's worth a pruta, if it's clearly insignificant and the owner does not care about it. Similarly, one need not return an item which has obviously been abandoned by its owner and is found lying in the street. Although the basic halacha does not require the item of a non-Jew to be returned, it's proper to do so in order to sanctify Hashem's name, to make Kiddush Hashem. And if not returning the item would cause a chilul Hashem, then you would be obligated still to return it. If one finds a lost object on Shabbos in an area where carrying is forbidden, then according to Be'er Halacha, then you can't pick it up. Even if it's found in an area where carrying is allowed, but it's muksa, many poskim hold that you can't pick it up. Although the Mishnah Berurah says that you can kick the muksa item to a safe place. The mitzvah of Hashavas Avedis applies only as long as the owner of the item expects and hopes that the item will be found and returned. If, however, the owner has given up hope of recovering his loss and has written it off, the Torah does not obligate the finder to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. And if one finds an item which will be missed by its owner, either because of its weight or size, like a box or a bag, or because of its importance, like a wallet or loose cash, we can assume that the owner is aware of his loss, since a person constantly checks his pockets to make sure that belongings are safe. And in certain situations, we can reasonably assume that by the time the item was found, the owner has already despaired of recovering his loss. For example, an item is lost in an area where the majority of passers-by are non-Jewish or non-observant. We assume in this situation the owner will surely despair, since he presumes the item will not be returned to him. If the item was lost in a Jewish area but didn't have any simanim, any marks, to identify it, then no reasonable person can expect to return such an item. And if the item had simanim, but it was lost to all, such as being swept away by a flowing river, then again, that wouldn't apply. In all these cases, the finder will have despaired of recovering the item, and therefore, if someone picks it up, the owner gave up hope, then you aren't required to return it. But however, it is proper to go beyond the strict requirement of the halacha and return an object to a person who offers proof of ownership, even if he has despaired of recovering it. It is considered the proper and right thing to do. A finder should be made aware of what is required of him according to the basic halacha, as well as the proper and right conduct which exceeds the demands of basic halacha. And then just on a mitzvah towards the end of the parsha, it says in Perek Chaf Dalad, B'yomo titein sacharo velo tavol alav hashemesh. On that day shall you pay his hire, the sun shall not set upon him. So this is talking about the mitzvah of lo salin, timely payment. So in the verse quoted, that I've just quoted, the Torah says that it commands that a labourer who completes his work must be paid on that day. This means that a worker who finishes his job during the daytime must be paid by sunset of that day. If the worker has not been paid in full by sunset, his employer has transgressed a biblical prohibition. Similarly, a worker who completes his job during the night must be paid in full during daybreak. If the worker is hired for a full day or night, or for a full week or month, he must be paid by the morning or evening after the term of employment is over. These laws apply also to rental fees. When the rental period is over, payment must be made by the end of that day or night. There is a dispute amongst the Rishonim over whether these laws apply to property rental as well. The Chofetz Chaim rules that one who is late with his house rent has transgressed this prohibition. And payment for work contracted by the job is also included in this commandment. So when an item is taken for repair or cleaning, or if a plumber or electrician comes into one's home for a specific job, payment must be made on that day, on the day that the item is picked up or the job is completed. And an employer cannot force his worker to accept compensation other than cash. Payment, therefore, must be in cash or with a cheque that can be easily and quickly cashed. The payment must be made on time to a minor as well. Thus, when a babysitter is hired, she must be paid before the day or night is over. There are, however, several exceptions to the above rules. Thus, prohibition only applies if the worker asks, either himself or through a messenger, to be paid. If the worker doesn't mind being paid at a later date, it's permissible to defer payment. If the common practice in a given locality is to pay a labourer's wages at the end of the month or at a time when accounts are calculated, then again, payment can be made at a later date. Therefore, it follows that if a babysitter is hired on a one-time basis, she must be paid on that day. This is because she expects to be paid immediately upon completion of her job. However, if the babysitter is hired on a steady basis, then there is no deadline for the time of payment, since many people do not pay their regular babysitter after each session, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And one is allowed to make a precondition with his worker that he will not be paid on time, according to the Shach. This condition must be made before the worker agrees to do the job. Thus, even a one-time babysitter may be paid at a later time if she was told this condition before she agreed to take the job. And an employer who has no money to pay the employee does not transgress this prohibition. If he has no money but is able to borrow, he must do so. Not having the exact change on hand is also no excuse to delay payment.
Very good. Thank you very, very much.
Very good. Shkoyach. Very good. Okay. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, we are learning Siman Tov Kuf Tzadi Hei, page at the bottom of the page. We discussed yesterday, what if a person has got two villages to go to? He can either go to a place which has a shofar, or he can go to a place which has a minyan. Where should he go? So, we said yesterday, quite correctly, that if he's got an option of either going to a shofar village, or a minyan village, he will go to the shofar village. Why? Shofar is the reise. That far, that, I think we can all, that's, makes sense. That's straightforward. The question is, second day Yom Tov, question number one is second day Yom Tov. Second day Yom Tov is only Darbonon. So therefore, it's not like the former question, because here you've got two Darbonons. Minyan is Darbonon, and Shofar on the second day is Darbonon. Where do you go? Shofar, why Shofar? Yeah, so the Mishnah does say that. You will go to that. The other question is a Sofek. Sofek was the other question we discussed yesterday. So you've got a Sofek. In other words, you can either go to the minyan, you've got a proper Rosh Hashanah Shachris and Mosef, or you've got a Shofar, but the Shofar you're not sure. It may or may not work out. They may say, actually, it's not. Yeah, we thought we have got a shofar. It turns out it's that other thing that you use, the other thing. Ah, the chanuk menorah. Yeah. So you've got, what if you don't have a vadai shofar? What do you do then? Sofek shofar vadai minyan. First day Yom Tov. Where do you go? Which village? First of all, I think you should consider moving. That's the first thing. Yeah, but if you're there for Yom Tov, where would you go to? Would you go to the place that perhaps has a shofar, or the place that has a vadai minyan? Shofar? Why? It's only Sofek. You would take the risk. You take the risk. You're saying the first day. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, Simon Tov Kuf Sadiye. Misha Einoi Boki Bet Kiyas. We've got a Yid over here that cannot blow the shofar. V'loi Beset Tifnas Musav. He also doesn't have Musav ability. Shtei Aroyes Bachas Bekiyim Bet Kiyas. It's one place that could actually have the Bet Kiyas. V'loi Bet Tifnas Musav. And there's no Musav there, there's no Minyan. V'achas Bekiyim Tifnas Musav. V'loi Bet Kiyas. The other place has got Tifnas Musav, but doesn't have Tkiyas. What does he do? This is the very, very first example we mentioned. Hoylech Lamokim Shbekiyim Bet Kiyas. You go to the Tkiyas place. And the Mishnah Bunsev Kotnavalev tells us why. The Tkiyah is the Reisa. That's what we all mentioned. The Brocha is the Abonon, and Davening is only the Abonon. Sheni, even on the second day Yom Tov. Even on the second day Yom Tov. Now, even on the second day Yom Tov. Does that teach us, Rabbi Yisrael? I wonder, does that teach us? Second day Yom Tov. Does that, so we're learning out on a second day Yom Tov also, you gotta go for the Tkiyas. Although it's a Dabbanon. So how are we gonna rephrase? It's gonna be really important. How do we understand that? So you go on the second day, although it's on the Dabbanon, you're gonna go for the Tkiyas Shefer. Why? Because the Tkiyas Shefer is? Oh, not on the second day. Yeah, but you're close.
The actual mitzvah itself is the
Dabbanon. Oh, what did you say yesterday? What was your Nusach yesterday? Concept is the Reise. This is actually so. Does that mean, Rabbi Yisrael, real halacha l'maaseh shaila? A real halacha l'maaseh shaila. Rabbi Yisrael, we have many chumras when it comes to the tkiyas. We've got many chumras when it comes to the tkiyas. Our truas, our shvarim, and we go again over it, and we go then many chumras. Why? Because we say at the end of the day, Oshana Tkiyas, it's the Reise. Sofik, the Reise, the Chumre. Rabbi Yisai, based on our Mishtabura here now, I'm asking the following question. What happens on the second day Yom Tov if there is a Shaila that comes up? You are Sofik Yoitze. Sofik not Yoitze. You did Tkiyam. Shvarim, you did you're not sure what it is. A good Shvarim, not a good Shvarim, you did twice instead of three times. The true, you're not sure, you did the nine, two. Sveikas. How will I know? Do you look at it as a Sofek the Reise, or do you look at it as a Sofek the Abonon? Wow, what a beautiful Shaila. Big differences, Aloch Lemaise. So normally we would have assumed that what? Until about 3.5 minutes ago, we would have said, second day Yom Tov, what do you mean? Generally, the rule is, Sofek Dabonon Kula. Don't be nervous, relax, it's Dabonon. You got Sofek, you're lenient. Sofek Dabonon Kula. But, we learned, 3 minutes and 45 seconds ago that what? We just came up with a very interesting psak. That if you've got, would you be able to learn from that? We learned just now, Lochana, on the second day Yom Tov, you've got to choose between the minyan and that tkiyas, what do you do? Sofek tkiyas? So, forget about Sofek. If you've got Vadai Minyan on the second day, or Vadai Shofar on the second day, what we just learned now, you got to go for that? Shofar.
The second day Rosh Hashanah is slightly different from the
second day. I'm talking about Sofek tkiyas as well. Sofek tkiyas, and I'm talking about if you're perhaps not Yotzer tkiyas. But it's still the Rabbanon. It's still the Rabbanon. I know it, but it's still the Rabbanon. But 1 second, Rabbi says, we're learning over here that could it be? Would you say or would you not say that if you've got a Shaila to be Yoitza the Mitzvah of the Tkiyas on the second day, would you say that you should be stringent or not? I think we've got a solid argument that yes, you should. Why? I think it's a solid argument. Just like we're seeing that but you've got to choose between the minyan on a second day, and the shofar. You go for the shofar, despite the fact that it's second day, it's the Rabbanon. Because we're learning of it that the second day, we're looking at the tkiyas like the stringency of first day. We're looking at it as we're pretending it's the Reise. So therefore, if you've got sfik, you also pretend it's the Reise. And sofik. Sofik pretend the Reise. Sofik pretends the Reise. Says the Shulchan Aruch continues. Yeah. Now, did you hear that, Rabbi Yisai? Shulchan Aruch says on the third line, even if the Musav is Vadai and the Tkiyas are Sofek, you're going to go for the you're going to go for the suffix gears.
Mechaber's clearly trying to bring out the point here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't invent these examples unless you've tried.
Absolutely, that's the chiddush here. Absolutely, very big chiddush. Im yochel lelech l'mokom shemispalim v'yeshuz b'yoyim shesh magam kinat kis mokom shetoykin yikayim shtem mitzvahs. The kalayim kol shelitka. Rama says something which I really don't understand. What needs to be? I don't understand that. What happens if you can do both? What happens if you can go to the minyan and you can also go to the shofar? Guess what you got to do then? Rama says, I have a really good idea. Go to both. I don't know why the Gemara tells us that. Obviously. But the Gemara tells us that. Okay. Now, so I say, the answer is, second the Yom Tov, you also go for the shofar. And even in a case, on the first day, that you don't know you're going to have a shofar, and you do know you're going to have a minion, you go for the perhaps shofar. Unbelievable.
The point of the Rima that because the, like I said, because the mitzvah applies all day, is he making the point you can go to the if the minions first and the
yeah, perhaps, but it's it comes it, yeah, it perhaps maybe the
because you've got to go
yeah.
The
yeah, you're right. That is clearly what you're sure, right? But nevertheless, I would have assumed this is pretty straightforward. Yeah. Okay, Simon Tovkuf said, top of page 136. What happens after the final? Says the Shulchan Aruch, la'achat fila at the end of davening, Meriyim tekiyo gedoy lo, beloy tekiyo. So what happens then? Itua gedoy lo, beloy tekiyo. You do a long tour without a tekiyo. Okay, let's see what the Rama says to that. Not quiet. There are places that do 30 additional tkiyas. That's what we do. Because we do 30 plus 40 plus 30 altogether. We're trying to get to 100 tkiyas. So that's what we do. These 30 koilos that Rama mentions over here, that is what we do. But now the Rama says something which is quite unknown. What if you fancy, you don't want to do 100, you want to do 116 tekiyas, because you figured out that's the gematria of your name, and you think it's a really great scholar, or it's actually your grandmother's name, and you think that you want a schus of your grandmother to help you on the Shoshana. You want to have 136, because that's the gematria of Hashem's name times. You want to do, you find that really nice vault in the, you want to do, you know. So can you do 136 tekiyas? The Rama says, no, you can't. We've got to do 30, okay? Meaning it's 200, but that's it. That's it now. Don't like, No, 100 tekiyas. If you find it difficult to count to 100, all right, but just get to 100 and that's it. The Racham is a shuv ain't litka oid bechinam, for nothing. Aval kotna filu gie lechinuch muta loy meishitka, muta litka kol hayom. If it comes to a child, if a child who is a gie lechinuch, and he wants to blow a bit more, all right, he can blow more, but that's not in terms of fulfillment of the mitzvah. Rabbi Yisai, why is it that we have this final long tekiah that we do at the very end? Tekiah gedoy lo, and we have this extra long tekiah that we do. Why? Where does that come from? Two reasons. Reason number one, why do we do tekiah gedoy lo? Why? So, the Mishnah Berurah says, Kedel Arbe Vasotan, we're confusing the Sultan. How the Sultan gets confused, I don't know. And I certainly don't know how the Sultan gets confused every single year again. But it seems to be doing the trick. So, we do it Kiyak Doyle we do it Kiyak Doyle. Now, there's another reason as well. And that I find very, inspirational. What the Mefarshim say. I think it's quoted from the Minchas Eluza. No, from the it's quoted from this. Where is it? Elif Lemargain. He's quoted in saying that we it's a symbolic final tkiyah, because that gives us the message that we should continue with the tkiyahs. We should carry on. The tkiyah should stay with us with the tkiyah gedola to keep us going. Tkiyah gedola at the end gives the message keep. You should internalize the tkiyah and you should stay with it, and you should carry on with it. Having said this,
so something I found from Rabbi Leibel Lam. So Sam is it's got waterfalls. Have you seen the waterfalls there?
No. Yeah. Is it?
So he says like this. So the posset says. Sorry.
This is where I went today.
Oh, very nice. I'll show everyone later. Make them jealous. He says, as the apostle said, you should not keep in your pouch two different weights, one large and one small. You shall not keep in your house two different measures, one large and one small. Rather, you shall have a full and honest weight and a full and honest measure, in order that your days will be prolonged on the land which Hashem, your God, gives you. For whoever does these things, whoever perpetrates such injustice is an abomination to Hashem, your God. So that's the posuk. So he says, here is a fascinating explanation. This is written by Rabbi Shaya Kalinsky. It bears repeating because the implications and applications of this idea are relevant and manifold. He says, the Kli Yakka points out a seeming redundancy and inconsistency in the verse. First, the Torah expresses a prohibition against having one's possession, both large and small, weights and measures. Then the Torah commands that one should have full and righteous weights and measures. So the terrible conclusion is that it is an abomination before God, all who do these, all who act corruptly. So it's not apparent what is wrong with keeping both, small and large. Weights, what's the problem? It is the small weight, which is the tool used to shortchange his customers. So the large weight is probably fair and honest. It's the fair and honest weight. So what else would he use it for if it was larger than the required weight? Would he cheat himself? There should only be a prohibition against the small weights. So therefore, the mandate to have full and righteous weights would be redundant. Full, quote unquote, would include the honest weight. So what is added by the demand that it be righteous? All who do these, quote unquote, refers to the dishonest use of weights and measures as criminal activity. So what has the Torah added with, quote, all who act corruptly? So the Kli Yakka begins his explanation by agreeing that the large ones refer to an honest weight, and the command of full and righteous is the demand that one only be honest with a full, honest weight, not shortchanging his customers, but to be righteous, going beyond the letter of the law, providing a little extra. So he then references a similar verse in Mishlei, which has similar textual difficulties. Quote, a weight and a measure, implying having different size weights, an abomination before God, are also both of them. So if they are both dishonest, why use the language also? They are simply dishonest. So he says, rather, the verse refers to two different weights or measures, one which is honest and one which is dishonest. We are being taught that the honest one is also an abomination. So here he's saying that, so the honest one, honest weight, is also an abomination, for it is the facilitator that enables the person to get away with cheating customers with the dishonest one. So if a storekeeper has a weight which he was shortchanging a customer, this customer would come home, discover he had received less than what he had paid for, and he would bring the storekeeper to court. The storekeeper might defend himself with the claim that some of the produce might have fallen out of the bag, or the customer left the store, or was lost after he got home. But if the court would receive a number of similar complaints, it would become apparent that the storekeeper was shortchanging his customers. So what's the solution? So the storekeeper also maintains an honest set of weights, and many customers are served honestly with them. When a customer who was cheated comes to court and complains, the storekeeper can now defend himself with the claim that the shortage happened after she left the store. And to clarify that claim, he offers to bring all the satisfied customers to always receive the full amount due to them. So if the court will send an investigator to check the weight, The storekeeper will show the honest weight, proving that he does not cheat anyone. So in conclusion, says the Kliyaka, the honest weight is just as much as abomination as the dishonest weight, for it is the honest weight that enables the criminal to get away with his dishonest dealings. So his honest dealings are therefore a mode of cover-up, a mask of sorts to help him select his victims in a nice disguise. Got there in the end, yeah, got there. A bit long-winded, but got there in the end. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much. Good Shabbos, everyone. Good Shabbos.